Alana, good evening, and how are you doing?
Hi, Gretchen. So good to be talking to you. I'm good.
No, wonderful, wonderful. It's been a while. It's been a minute since we've had a chat the last time, but it's lovely catching up with you. And of course, yeah. You gave me a bit of an education the last time we the first time we spoke. You gave me a bit of an education around what it means to be an Ayurvedic practitioner. And now we're expanding the conversation around to the notion of the prosperity perspective. Now, I joked earlier on, and I'm just double checking with you, this has nothing to do with the prosperity gospel, does it now? Because it's not a very popular topic as we speak.
Well, I'm going to leave your curiosity hanging, and I am extremely excited to have my good friend and colleague Casey with me on tonight, and she's going to be giving us some insights into two topics that we tend to think are completely unrelated, and that is our health, and you are correct with your pronunciation of Ayurveda. We are Ayurvedic practitioners, and Casey's going to drop another bomb on us tonight to teach us some more valuable insights on how we can link Ayurveda to prosperity and indeed to all areas in our life.
Good evening to you, Casey, and thank you for joining us. I was just giving an opportunity for you to get ready and clear the throat, as they would say. Good evening to you, and thank you for chatting to us this evening.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I am so excited to be here.
Awesome stuff. So, I mean, to kick things off, and I asked very directly, what is the prosperity perspective, and you know, how do we then use it or introduce it into our lives?
So in Ayurveda, we have what is called the three gunas. Now, we actually have other gunas, but the three gunas focus on the mind. And in the mind, that is really where we have either prosperous thoughts or poverty thoughts. So the gunas are sattvic, rajas, and tamas. And from a creation perspective, sattva is our own self, and it really gives us the ability to do good and act in accordance with the laws of nature. And then when we think about rajas, we think about the dreams and becoming motivated and how we can take action to make these dreams into a reality and really bringing us this beautiful, perfect, prosperous life that we are truly desiring. And then there's also tamas. So a lot of people look to tamas as a negative guna in the Ayurvedic world. And while tamas really focuses on restlessness and unsettled and anger and frustration, it also helps us to see what is no longer working in our life and then how we need to move into a more rajastic state of life in order to really become sattvic. So when we're thinking on a poverty level, and then poverty has a lot of different meanings. It doesn't always necessarily mean money and finances. It could be a lot of different ways. But how can we use tamas in our daily life to bring us into, you know, thinking of what is it that we truly desire? What is it that our dreams really want us to do? And then bringing us into this sattvic mindset of always thinking prosperity thoughts and always being in gratitude and being gracious and loving and truly living in this accordance with the laws of nature and the laws of the divine.
That is actually quite interesting. I mean, it's... And again, I'll ask both Alani as well as Casey to you know, to mind my ignorance around this. I mean, is it similar at least to the notion of the power of attraction? What you think about, what you set your mind on is what you attract then towards yourself. You know, as opposed to the notion of if I have negative thoughts all the time, then, well, you know, negativity is what's going to surround me. Is it sort of my very simplistic way of understanding it?
I'll jump in there. You know what? I've been thinking about the law of attraction a lot lately, and you were saying that, you know, it's about the way that we think about things. But my conclusion that I have sort of drawn from thinking and overthinking this whole subject is that it's not so much what we think about, It's what we feel. And that is exactly what these three states of being that Casey introduced us to, that is what it is about. How am I feeling? On what level am I connecting to reality? Am I connecting to harmony where things flow and I'm in a mindset where I see opportunities and opportunities present themselves and I'm able to realize them? That's what she was calling the sattvic state. Or am I in a rajastic state, which is the state of action and passion and aggression and goals? Which state do I find myself in? Am I able to be in harmony, or am I going to be in that very creative, passionate state? Or thirdly, am I finding myself in the tamasic state, which is that low energy, lethargy, feeling down, feeling stuck? And how can I, by becoming aware of my feelings, change my actions to bring about different feelings and different results?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that in itself for me is quite a fascinating way of looking at it. And so, I mean, how do I take this further? How do I take this forward and sort of start applying it to my life? And is that, again, a very simplistic way of looking at it?
Yes, thank you, Alani. So I actually have a homework assignment that I will give you that I not only use when I'm teaching, but I use this with my...
Hi, Casey. Okay, let's try to...
Yes, did I lose you? Can you hear me? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, sure. I just thought for a second there that we had some weird electronic interferences, but yeah, let's continue.
So I always give this to my students as well as my clients, and what Alani has said about feeling. So when you think about like essence and spirituality, how do you want to feel within the realm of your essence and your spirituality? Do you want to feel light? Do you want to feel peaceful? Or do you want to feel heavy and dark? And then think about your relationships in society. How do you want to feel within the realm of these relationships in society? Do you want to feel aggression? Do you want to feel gentle and intelligent? And then again, your body and your wellness. How do you want to feel in your body? What do you need to do to experience these realms and these ways of being inside the body? Do you want to feel lazy? Or do you want to feel, again, very light and happy? And then when you're really thinking about spirituality and your body and your relationships in society, this comes to your lifestyle. How do you want to feel in your lifestyle? Do you want to feel, again, at peace? Do you want to feel light in the mind? Do you want to feel prosperous? Do you want to feel successful? I think a lot of people, that's so important, they relate a lot of success to money. So if you're bringing all of these things together and we're looking at it from a sattvic or peaceful way or a rajastic or aggressive way or a tamasic and cunning and fearful and lazy way, how do you want to bring and bring all of this together? And as Alani said, how are you feeling into these ways on a daily basis?
Well, for sure. And I mean, that's a very interesting way of looking at it as well, especially around what it is that you actually want. What is it that you want out of the situation? And I think all too often it's really something that vests with you. And I guess part of the reason why we're having this conversation is, Alani, is this evening, is that a lot of us don't actually know that it vests largely with us.
That's correct. And one of the interesting things is that our mind actually does not know the difference between reality and what is imagined. If you think back to something that happened in the past, somebody made you extremely angry. If you go and think back at that event and you replay that tape loop in your mind, what happens in the physical body? You can actually feel your heart rate increase. Maybe you feel warm. Maybe you feel your breath rate increase. Maybe you feel sweaty. That anger comes back.
even if it was an injustice that was done onto you years ago, or a sadness, loss of a loved one, we've all experienced grief. If we go back to that old event, no matter if it was 20 years ago, if we go back to that old event and we go and replay that thing in our memory, that sadness, that emotion, the pain comes back as sharp and sometimes even worse than it was in that exact moment. So how do we train ourselves and how do we train our perception and our perspective of prosperity to bring it into a realm that can become so tangible for us that with as much passion as we can experience the past, that we can experience the future or the possibility of the future with the same amount of passion and never mind the future. How can I embrace my current reality from a state that puts me in a vibration that brings harmony and that puts me in a vibration and a mental state where I'm able to see things that can potentially change my life forever? That is the question.
And that's a very important point that you're picking up from there, Alani, because I think part of the issue, you know, especially when we use terms like forever or former life or, you know, a life-changing event, in other words, it's something that we think of in terms of this will impact my life. It almost seems, you know, it seems so big. It seems so massive. And that in itself might be a scary thought as well. And all too often, you also find yourself in the situation whereby, yes, I'm working towards this for a future date, for some part of my life. But actually, right now, in this very moment, I need to pull myself together and I need to put myself into a particular mindset. Is it something that you can do, something that you can think of, something that you can experience or work through for immediate results, something that I need now, in the year now?
I see. So when we look at our unconscious and our conscious mind, 10% is our conscious mind. So 10% of your waking day, your talking, your functioning, that is really only where you are operating at, again, 10%. The unconscious mind is the other 90%. And that unconscious mind is where the imprints stick, not only mentally, but also physically. So if you had something traumatic happen to you and you all of a sudden tensed up and you went and you took a breath, it has now imprinted physically and mentally. Your cortisol level starts to elevate. You might notice that the next day you might feel heavier. And this imprint that has now become part of your unconscious mind is something that is going to continuously replay until you are making the awareness to release it. And again, that's why yoga, meditation, those are so important, is because we really want to target that unconscious mind to release things that no longer serve us and then really like download ourselves with creativity and love and light. And then looking again from that sattvic rajasthanic perspective, when we think about our emotions, do you think of your emotions as you're always honest? And that's kind of where sattvic tendencies tend to be. And then for those who are more in a logistic state of mind, that's a lot of denial. And then when we look at tamas, that's the suppression. So you had something traumatic happen to you, and you really start to embrace this tamasic way by suppressing these emotions that have now imprinted on your subconscious mind. So maybe not today, but, you know, down the line next week, next month, next year, all of a sudden you become aggressive or fiery because you never processed these emotions. You just suppress them. And they eventually do come out in different forms. And sometimes that is by negative thought processes, anger, frustration, yelling. People tend to be very fidgety when they have a lot of repressed emotions. So these all come out in patterns because we as humans, it is very hard for us to work through them. And a lot of times we are not ready to deal with it. We would rather just hold on to it until we quote unquote think we're ready. And again, this is why breath work, yoga, meditation is so important to teach us to release these patterns.
And, you know, and that's, again, something that points to the convolutions of it. It's not something that can that you deal with in isolation. It's part of a broader lifestyle. Is it not so, Alani? It's not, you know, there's not a, it's not a quick solution. It's not one of those easy fixes. It's not one of those easy solutions that you pick up, you know, 5 ways, 10 ways, 7 ways of ABCD. This is actually something that forms part of your life.
Absolutely. It's so much a decision that you make. I'll give you two perspectives from a more yogic and spiritual perspective. In yoga, we very often say that where your attention goes or where your awareness goes, the energy flows. And that is a large part of your yoga practice, is practicing to use your mind in order to direct the energy and the movement in the body so that you can have that clarity of mind. Now, from the scientific point of view, what the scientists say is that neurons or nerves that fire together wire together. And that has to do with the formation of habits. So when we find ourselves doing the same thing over and over, waking up in a certain state, what's the first thing that you do when you wake up in the morning? We all have a different morning routine. And if you really put some thought into it, the short version of the story is that we are basically grasping at ways to remember our illusion or our perspective of who am I. I grab my phone, go through the emails, check Facebook, see my missed calls. All of these things are reminders of who I am. Who do I associate with? Which events do I associate with? Mm-hmm. Even my brand of coffee, it's all so hardwired into our daily routine that in order to feel differently, we have to create literally a different reality to give us a new personality, a prosperous personality. If you're feeling down and out and horrible and broke and hopeless, I'm telling you now, a wealthy person who's truly wealthy and abundant never feels that way. They're not going to experience that emotion. But it's because we wake up and we remind ourselves through our first actions of the day, we remind ourselves of our environment, of our reality. Yes, these things cannot possibly be denied. If you're waking up on a hard floor after a cold, miserable night, there's no denying what your physical circumstance is. But is it possible for that to then go beyond the physical existence into a place where you can find yourself or practice a mental state that can bring you to a place where new opportunities will become visible to you, even if they've been around you all the time and you just haven't been the right person in the right place at the right time to recognize that possibility for what it was, if that makes any sense.
No, I hear you. And you know, it's again, it's something for me personally that's extremely new. But I'm sure that there's a couple of listeners that are listening into this conversation that have questions of their own that may have a lot more experience in the space. 011-883-0702. And I guess this is the amazing bit about it, especially now that we're having this particular conversation. The notion of prosperity is such a difficult, you know, thing to wrap your head around, especially when you think about 2020, which I think no one saw coming. I mean, if you would remember, Casey, as well as yourself, Alani, we beckoned in this year by calling it 2020. So in other words, it was going to be a year of plentifulness. It was going to be a year of prosperity. We were very excited. 2019, now a distant memory, seemed to be a horrible year. I remember towards the end of the year, I think at this time of the year, talking about the worst year ever. And lo and behold, here in 2020, people have lost their jobs. We have the COVID-19 pandemic, etc., etc. And the three of us are having a conversation around prosperity. And I'm pretty sure there's many people who are saying, but hang on, how is that even possible in an environment where I feel unsafe? I feel like I'm, you know, there's the possibility of catching this illness. I'm worried about losing my job. I'm worried about the financial implications of it all, et cetera, et cetera. How do I find myself in thinking about prosperity when I'm here right now with the circumstances around me?
So when you look at your environment, this is a great way to say, am I impacted by what has happened in 2020? a lot of very successful entrepreneurs had a very prosperous year. They jumped on these opportunities to maybe start teaching online, seeing patients online. There's a wonderful restaurant in my neighborhood that they just started walking to deliver food to houses. They were embracing this change with the utmost excitement and really embracing all of the uncertainties that were going on. So when we look at our environment, what are your beliefs? What are your thoughts? What are your ideas? This is going to play more into that prosperity mindset. And then if you're going to look at money as prosperity, how do you assess your finances? Do you have a wealth mindset practice that you do every day? Do you turn on the television and right away turn on the news and listen to all of these things that are going on in the world? Or do you pick up a book and say, today, I'm going to be prosperous. Today, I'm going to be successful in my business. I'm going to sign 7 new clients today. How do you look at money? Do you have a good relationship with money, or do you have a bad relationship with money? When you're holding any kind of currency, do you think of financial freedom and say, I am so grateful that I have this today? So the environment really plays into how you have these financial prosperous thoughts or your perspective and going into your mindset. And then again, your physical environment. Do you feel inspired? Does your house or your office or your backyard, do you feel inspired when you are in these areas? Your body, do you feel inspired by your body? Your body is part of your prosperous mindset and thinking in this perspective way. If my body is healthy and I'm loving it and I'm feeling beautiful and I'm stylish, this is all projecting from me into my environment and also making me think these prosperous thought patterns. So I am somebody who loves a cup of coffee. Actually, I shouldn't even say a cup. I love 8 cups of coffee. But every time I go to make a cup of coffee, I love to say, I am grateful for this coffee. I am so blessed that I have this coffee to drink. It's delicious. It's satisfying. So that as my day is going on, I am living in this happy, joyous moment with my cup of coffee because I have already given the gratitude for my coffee that I love to nourish my body. Again, being in this wonderful and happy and prosperous environment.
I mean, that leads me immediately to, you know, the question of, and I think we've discussed it, you know, albeit through another conversation earlier in the evening, and that is the idea of what happens on the inside. You know, what is it that I feel and think and practice internally, that voice on the inside versus, you know, your external circumstances? Because I think all too often what happens to us as human beings, generally speaking, is that it's very easy for us almost to find ourselves in that situation or in that position whereby you internalize, you know, much of, not internalize only, but the word that I'm really looking for here is that your external environment, your external circumstances tend to dictate how you then feel internally. So because I don't have a fancy house or a fancy car, I feel bad about it, or, you know, I think that I've underachieved or I've underperformed or whatever the case may be. And I guess that this year is a very different perspective where it's what happens on the inside first before we start getting to the externalized stuff that's important.
Absolutely. And I was thinking about that as well, how the internal environment, like you were saying, really manifests in a very outward way. And we were speaking earlier about being in an environment that inspires you. Now, what kind of environment does it take to make a person feel inspired? I've come across it so many times in the world where you have people who are exceedingly wealthy on the outside. They have the houses and the cars and all the luxuries, but they're miserable. So is that external, beautiful, white picket fenced and manicured lawn, is that necessarily the only environment that can make a person feel inspired? What about acknowledging that I'm in a loving relationship, that I have easy children, that I have a warm plate of food or somewhere to lay my head at night. That is the trick. And I think the number one thing, coming back to what you were saying, is creating that awareness. We can go through a very difficult year, like 2020, and mm-hmm. be in a down state, a difficult state of mind, depression, tamas, like Casey was saying, that tamasic state of mind is what we call it in Ayurveda. And we can stay in that state, aware that we're not feeling good, but that's where the awareness ends. We need to train ourselves to foster a deeper awareness of, wait a minute, I'm feeling really icky on the inside. Mm. And instead of waiting every day and reestablishing my misery so that I can feel like my miserable self, am I able to go to a place and say, wait a minute, I acknowledge that I am miserable with good reason. I've had these and these challenges. But where can I shift my awareness? Like the yogic saying, where the awareness goes, energy flows. Can I shift my awareness somewhere else, where my energy will follow and where the output will give me a different result?
I mean, and again, that is such a, an exciting way of looking at it, because as I said, going back to it, is that we tend to look for sort of the social media. And that's what came to mind, Alani, as you were talking about that. The social media definition of perfection, right? Oh, I'm living the most. You know, I have this car, I have this house. These are the places I go to. These are my cool friends. This is what we drink. This is how we club. This is how we dance. And it's not passing judgment on how people find their happiness or their excitement, I guess. But for me, it's more a case of looking at what it is that actually we can then look at in our lives that makes us happy, that gives us that sense of inspiration, for lack of a better term. But the question that I always, that comes up in my mind, Casey, immediately when having these conversations, is it a minor adjustment? Is it something that I apply to my life? Generally, you know, a chapter that I can take hold of? Or is it a broader lifestyle that I need to commit to?
Well, when you think about people who are on social media, you think that what actually happens is that their egos take over and their ego says, I need to have so many followers. I need to have this car in order to be successful. I need to do this in order to be this. And what is actually happening is that people are restricting their own self-expression. They're not able to be who they are truly meant to be. And being this authentic you is so amazing. And when we look at old patterns and old ways, we start to really restrict who we are meant to be in this world. When people always look at the wealthy, they think big cars, big houses, jewelry, you know, expensive clothes. But some of the richest people that I know in the world are people who live very humbly. Mm. They're very generous. They're always giving. They're not on social media making a spectacle of themselves. They are wanting to educate and help people and spread the word about bettering yourself, bettering your ways, bettering your life, bettering your environment. Those are the people who are truly wealthy and living this prosperous lifestyle every single day. They are waking up with gratitude. They are waking up with happiness. They are waking up and they are feeling good in their bodies. So I don't do social media because I don't like to get into that tamasic energy. But a lot of times when I have just, you know, if somebody showed me something, I see people and I see, wow, they are so insecure in themselves. They haven't found their direction. They think that copying somebody else is going to make them fulfilled, when ideally what makes them happy is turning on the radio really loud, singing and dancing while they're cooking in their kitchen. That might be somebody that is their true authentic expression. And we need to have more of that in this world to really create these prosperous ways and really starting to bring about abundance and success and love and everything beautiful in our lives so that we are always embracing this sattvic mentality.
And Casey, let's talk about that, especially from the, from what you had just said there, specifically to looking at social media. It's an inevitable part of our lives. You know, the vast majority of people are connected and they're part of the digital world. They live that life. They contribute to it. They get fed by it, et cetera, et cetera. And that in itself, and I think as much as we started off a conversation around prosperity, I think influences like that tend to distort give us the worst possible template for what prosperity ultimately is. And I know we've touched on it before, because I might be really prosperous because of the family that I have. I might be really prosperous because of the lifestyle I have, the way my work enriches me. You know, there's a long list of different things that I could list as being prosperous as opposed to what the atypical template may be via social media. But how do we then define prosperity without making it sort of this very broad, open definition that anything and everything could ultimately apply to?
Okay, so let's use money for an example. People love money. People are also very afraid of money. They want money, but they don't know what to do with money once they get it. So when we look to having a healthy wealth mindset, when you look at currency, do you say, I am so blessed to have this? And as you pay for something, are you blessing every person who you, if it's you're pumping petrol and you're handing it to somebody or you're getting carry out, are you saying, I'm grateful to have this and I am blessing this person, this person, and this person? When we look at it from a spiritual perspective, we can never outgive the universe. So when we are giving a tangible currency to somebody and we are saying, I am blessing you because I am grateful that I have this, the universe comes back to you and starts to bless you with more finances to start to give to bless more people. Because ideally, that's where the wealth mindset starts to begin. When you are waking up in the morning, do you open a book and start reading things that are going to bring success into your life? Every day I take a book and I read an entire passage and I know that every day I'm going to be successful. I start my day by already giving gratitude, giving success, telling the universe that I am grateful that I am about to receive all of these beautiful things today. And then the universe just, it magically brings it to you. And I know that people always laugh and say, oh, that's impossible. How do you start to do this? That goes back to really having a successful wealth mindset practice. So the more that you start to have a relationship with money, the more that money is going to love you back. Money also likes a task. People are like, oh, I just want to get money so I can just hold on to it and not do anything with it. Well, money is like energy, and money wants to have something fun. So when I get money, I say, oh, I'm so excited I have this money because I'm going to go and buy a pair of shoes, or I'm going to go and get a car wash, or I'm going to fill up, you know, my gas tank with petrol today. I get very excited. I'm tasking my money that's coming in for me every single day. And I've actually taught this in a business class, that the more that you start to task money and assign for things to do, you start to see more of it. Because if you are always trying to hold on to money and you have this fearful mindset that money is going to leave and it's never going to come back, then that's how you are already telling your money what to do. But if you're embracing it and you're having fun with it and you're loving it, it's going to want more of it. You have a relationship with money. How do you have a relationship with your spouse, your partner, your children, your parents? That's the same kind of relationship. When you see your kid, you're excited, you're happy, you want to give them a kiss. It's the same with money. When you see it, get excited, happy. I mean, you can kiss it if you want to, but that's how you really start to shift into these more wealth mindset ways, bringing more prosperity to you throughout the day.
And I mean, that's a fascinating point that Casey raises there, Lani, in terms of that relationship that we tend to have. Because, you know, one of the things that always stands out for me, and as she was talking about it, look at, for example, the direct example of looking at your relationship with money. all too often, as much as I want money, as much as I like money, as much as I crave money, it's still a very ambiguous relationship, because all too often you find that you're extremely annoyed by it, the process of obtaining it, the what you have to deal with, whether it be your work, whether it be your business and the stress attached to it, etc., etc. It's a very weird and ambiguous one. And ultimately, it becomes this strange situation whereby as much as I'm seeking it, as much as I want it, as much as I'm attracted to it and I want to attract it, it becomes this very weird relationship where you're almost constantly at odds over the issue, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I know I was raised in a bit of a culture where, you know, money wasn't really spoken about, budgets and things weren't really discussed. It was grown-up stuff. It was this mystery. And if you were a person who said that you like money or that you wanted it, it's almost shameful. That's the way that I was raised. You know, you must be modest about money. And also, you just mentioned the work environment, and I want to get back to lifestyle because you've asked twice already, is this a whole lifestyle thing? So I want to circle back to that. When we are in a situation where we have a relationship with money, either our programming from a very young age or because of the person that we've turned into when we started earning our own, the relationship that we have with money is very often closely linked to people. When we are earning a salary or getting our money through whatever means, we have contact with people. I have my colleagues at the office or whatever the case may be, my family business, whatever you want to create the scenario as. And if you are surrounded by people who are constantly reminding you how expensive things are, how inflation is going up, how prices are on the increase, how everybody's becoming poorer, are you staying in those human relationships, regardless of the culture around money, most of the time is not even aware of the, we call it the obvious club. Well, obviously I'm not going on that holiday, it's too expensive. Well, obviously we're not getting the car wash this month, you see.
Obviously, it's not a good idea for you to be doing ABCD. Maybe you should be saving, you know.
There we go. So who is your obvious club? What are they speaking? What we call it spelling for a reason. The words that we speak, we're casting spells, is how I like to explain it. So are we reiterating and agreeing somberly? Yes, obviously, we're all in dire straits. Obviously, this has been a dreadful year. Or are you willing to step away from your obvious crowd? Are you willing to put yourself out there to detach from your old beliefs? And it's very scary. Are you willing to be alone? Are you willing to discover who you are on your own and then attract people with new opportunities? Or are you too scared that that is going to rob you of your identity? Are you so married to the idea of suffering, never having enough, that it's become your identity? And are you willing to step away from it? That's what forms the biggest question.
That's very true. And it's weird how then those negative aspects almost become part and parcel of your identity, of who you are. It's almost, you know, definitive of the person that you are. And as much as you may complain, as much as you are negatively impacted and affected by these situations, these circumstances and these people, the sad, sad thing for me about it is all too often it's almost as if you're dependent on it. You know, you're feeding off of that. And, you know, listening to the both of you speak on this issue, what then inevitably happens is that there's almost a lack of progress. There's no progress in going forward and saying, this is me going forward with my life and this is how I am going to improve, become more prosperous, et cetera, et cetera. It sort of feeds itself and you find yourself in a negative funk, for lack of a better term. Is my understanding correct there, or it doesn't quite work like that, Casey?
So when I think about people and I look at people and I look at the associations that people are in, I listen to what word they are saying. And when you say things like,
bad or horrible or frustrated or depressed. It seems that everybody in that association is on that low level. I love to be a business owner, and I also love to work with business owners because I think of business owners as leaders. You have stepped out of this box, and you have started to take a chance, and you are starting to think differently. You are wanting to be successful. You are wanting to have money. You are wanting to really be your true authentic self. So when I listen to what other people are saying in the group, and a lot of times they play off on that Tamasic energy of, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, I'm broke, I lost my job, my car doesn't work, my kids are driving me crazy. They all like to just get together and just start talking, but yet they're not doing anything to make a change in their life. So when I think about entrepreneurs, I think of people who have stepped out of this way of life and are really wanting to be successful, to fulfill their dreams, to have money, and they almost start surrounding themselves with other people who are thinking these thoughts. So for me personally, I only surround my people and talk about success and business and love and how I can help somebody else generate revenue for their business and become more successful. I love to work with employees who have that same mindset of, I want to make money for this company because I want all of us to grow together. So the more that we start to think as a group more prosperous thoughts and leave all that negative, dark, restless energy in the past, and we start to embrace love and light and care and compassion, prosperity just naturally starts to circulate its way to you. And again, the more that you are having these prosperous conversations and really wanting to build up yourself, build one another up, that is where you really start to see the flow of money come.
I mean, that's actually a really fascinating way of looking at it, because I remember when I just started working, first job, first day on the job, and at the time it didn't necessarily matter to me. You know, one of my colleagues joked, you know, welcome to hell or welcome to misery or something to that effect. And I mean, I figured it's just a joke, so I smiled it off. But then it turns out that she actually got into trouble for that after the fact. You know, that she, management pulled her aside, whoever heard her, you know, mentioned it to her and said to her, listen, you shouldn't be saying that. You know, you shouldn't be. That's not a way to welcome someone. And then when I heard this, I thought, it's not such a big deal. It was obviously just a joke, but I think that the whole idea behind it was that notion of do not create a negative environment on day one. Obviously in this instance, they were dealing with someone that could see the joke in it, the humor in it, but for someone else to be surrounded by or greeted with that negativity, It can set a very bad tone. And unfortunately, let's be honest, in the spaces that we work in the spaces that we operate in, all too often you find you are often surrounded by a lot of negativity where no one has anything good to say about the company, about the boss, about the coworkers or anything of the sort. And it's just constant negative feedback. And that makes it difficult then to gain anything positive out of it.
Yes, exactly like you said, and we were talking about that becoming your identity, that can become your work identity. And indeed, as you said, if I can go into the medical science of this, it is actually addictive to remain in a state of stress or a state of anticipating the worst thing that can possibly happen. When we find ourselves in a stress response, either from work stress or you're in a fight with your spouse or your kids are driving you nuts or you're nuts or you had horrible traffic. Now you're finding yourself in a state of fight or flight. Your body is releasing adrenaline. It's releasing cortisol. It forms this whole hormonal loop that triggers one chemical reaction after the other. And in the end, what that all amounts to is that you have a literal physical high. You're in a state of high alert because you've got all these hormones coursing through your body. Your eyesight is sharp. Your ears are sharp. Nature designed us like that to run away from predators and dinosaurs and all sorts of funky things back in the day. Mm. But now, when we're not having, say, the tooth tigers chasing after us, yet we still have the fight and flight response. The body doesn't know the difference, or the mind doesn't know the difference between your boss biting your head off and a saber-toothed tiger biting your head off.
Very
so the same avalanche of hormones is triggered. And in reality, because we are in an alerted state of body and mind, clear-headed, as nature designed us to run away from the tiger, that becomes addictive. And what that leads to is that we keep on creating the same situations that we've had in the past that put us in that space unconsciously. We're not consciously doing it. Nobody wants to consciously feel stressed. But the body is as addicted to these hormones as it can be to coffee or cigarettes or anything else. So during the day, you'll find yourself recreating and creating again and again the same situations that led to that stress response within your own body, even if you are feeling awful. You get home, you're not feeling good. You don't like it. You wish it would stop. But you are the one who's creating this reality by your actions that lead to consequences that trigger those hormones. And the only way to fix it is by making a conscious decision, becoming aware, first of all, that you are doing this to yourself, and then making decisions, every single decision that you make. Is this setting me up for the kind of day I want to have? Or is this bringing me closer to my dream or goal? Or is this taking me further away? Waking up, scrolling through my phone. Is this bringing me closer to my goal of finding the perfect job? If it is, then great, carry on. If it's not, put the thing down and decide, what am I going to do to create the day that I want? Seeing as I'm creating the miserable ones anyway, how can I go and create a better one?
I mean, such a fascinating point that you're raising there, and it's it becomes part of the life cycle, and one needs to, I need to go introspect at the very minimum and go sit back and think to myself, am I one of those people that's becoming addicted to those very fight or flight chemicals that make up your brain? Because one does find yourself in that constant irritability, rushing, fighting, screeching, tire screeching, scenario where it's almost as if you can hear the tires screeching in your brain as you go about your day-to-day activities, because everything is a rush. Everything is always a crisis. Everything is, it needs to be done now. It needs to be done immediately, or else the world is going to fall in on itself. And the key question is not only is it actually worth it, but am I actually addicted to that stress? Am I actually addicted to that feeling? And I'm not actually quite solving the problems that cause it. Hello?
Casey? Hi. Oh, Alani, can I take this one? Is that okay?
By all means, please.
Yeah, please do. So I there's 100% an addiction thought process that causes people to be this way and to have these kind of behavioral traits. That, as Alani has said, that cortisol level starts flying through your body. There's other hormones that are going through the body. They're raging. And you get into a high. So when people really start to embrace this way of life, it becomes a pattern, and they thrive on it. And it truly is, when people use the word addiction, they always automatically think of people who are drinking or smoking or doing drugs. There are so many other kinds of addictions, and a lot of people thrive on being negative or gossiping or cutting other people down. They're bullied, and they can't almost go throughout their day without having to project this negative energy. Their minds and their mouths actually don't know any other way, because their imprint, again, going back to that unconscious mind, this has been an imprint on their unconscious mind to only know these ways. They don't know how to even embrace like yoga or meditation to really let go and allow like the sattvic energy to flow through them. They themselves fully become tamasic. And addiction, again, when we're talking about people who have these negative energies, they start to embrace things such as greedy. Their diet is very heavy and with greasy foods. They might lack exercise. They have no energy. They're very dull. They just want to sit and watch TV. They're not
really doing anything to change these ways, because this addictive behavior has pulled them in and that they don't know any other way. A few weeks ago, Alanga and I had talked with Aubrey, and we were talking about, you know, creating changes and patterns. It takes 21 days for people to start making changes because your cells actually need to turn over in the course of this 21-day process. So the more that you're embracing healthy eating, healthy lifestyles, healthy mindset, prosperous reading, after 21 days, your cells are turning over to actually embrace this way of life so that you can now start to become healthier. You're doing things that make you happy. You're releasing yourself from these addictive ways. And again, you're really embracing more of this fat-vic type energy every day in your life.
Unfortunately, because of time, we'll have to end it there. But I really thank both of you, Casey, as well as Alani, for a really interesting conversation. Any contact details where people can get a hold of you and find out more, websites or that type of thing?
Yes, they can reach me here in South Africa on the office number is 060-628-6149. Or they can visit www.yogavedainstitute.com. We are running a nice free giveaway course that we've got on there if people wanted to learn more about their own constitutions and how the energetics within their own bodies and minds. Everything that we've spoken about tonight is included in that course as well. So if people want to go and learn more, that's the place to be.
Awesome stuff. Thank you so much to both of you. All the best to you. That was Casey Sui as well as Alani Beckett. And I think a very interesting conversation.